بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. With respect to the portents of Qiyamah, there are several hadiths. One says that ilm will be taken away, and the other hadith says that there will be an abundance of ilm. So how do you reconcile the both? One is saying that there is an abundance of ilm, and the other is saying that ilm will be taken away. The ulama have given various opinions. In my mind, the most preferable opinion, after seeing what's going on and how ilm is being abused, literature is in abundance, like you had never seen before. Kitabs that you had never seen, and perhaps you had not dreamt to see, now it's on the market. Manuscripts that were in handwriting, never printed, over 1,000 years ago, and someone finds it, and then it's marketed, right? So in that respect, there is an abundance. Libraries are full, and even learners, you will find, they've got books that you couldn't dream of previously. There were so much kitabs, so many books. But with all this, the level of understanding and the level of digestion is not there. Food, the whole idea was that food must digest, right? Not that you take an abundance of food, but the idea was that food must digest in the system and must transform from food to energy, right? That's the idea. But if someone is not digesting and he's taking and he's just throwing out, finished. What would you say? That there's no food in the system. Now he can argue, say, but so much of food he's taking. Yes, he's taking food, but the system doesn't want to accept it, doesn't want to receive it, so there's no food. So the same with knowledge, that he's taking the knowledge, but the system is not digesting it, it is just wasting it, because he doesn't know the application. So the proof for it is this, that the hadith that talks about the knowledge going away also says that knowledge will be taken away by Allah Ta'ala taking away the ulama-i kiram. Right? Allah Ta'ala didn't say that knowledge will be taken away by the kitabs taken away, by the lifting away of manuscripts, or the lifting away of encyclopedias. He didn't say that. But he said by taking away the ulama. So that means that real genuine knowledge is that which is preserved in the heart, is not that which is in the manuscript or in the books. Otherwise, the hadith would have been differently worded. It would have been worded in this way, that the manuscripts and the books and the encyclopedias, that would have been taken away. So we understand that this knowledge is transferred from person to person. It's not from book to book, but from person to person. To be able to appreciate it, to be able to digest it, to be able to enjoy it, all is transferred from one person to the second person to the third person. So that knowledge, you see, is beneficial knowledge. But that knowledge that hasn't come down in this type of a chain, then you will say that it's not beneficial knowledge. we don't know what it is all about. Hence you see that in this day and time, the most educated are non-Muslims in respect to the Quran, Hadith, etc. That what knowledge they have, that we don't have still. They have so much of knowledge about the Quran, so much of knowledge of the Hadith. Many of them know much more than what we know. They are more they are more fluent in Arabic. They know the Hadith more than what we know. But in spite of all that, we don't say that they are very learned ulama. Do we say that they are ulama? Do we say that they are learned? We don't say that. Why don't we say it? Because they haven't taken it fully. They haven't grasped it fully. Right? Mona Ayub Kashmi, who was the head of the Talimi board in Johannesburg, he was here once. He explained when the trouble was taking place in Bosnia and Serbia and all these places, so they had to do some relief operations. And it was his luck that next to him there was a Jewish rabbi. They were also doing the same. They were doing some relief operations in that same area. So they got talking whilst in flight, you know. So the Jewish rabbi got talking to him, and he says to him that, see, I know your religion more than you know it, so don't teach me. Because obviously an alim or a person who is deeni, conscious, then he would talk about deen, right? Someone is in Jamaat, you're in the plane or something, what will you talk about? Talk about deen. So he must have been discussing something about deen, inviting the person towards Islam. So the rabbi says, no, I know more about your deen than what you know about your deen. They start quoting hadith and Quranic ayat, etc. Until Mu'adh got conversed with this person, knows too much. Then he went on to say, but with all that, we don't accept Islam. But we are also convinced that what you'll say is absolutely true, it must happen. We know that what you'll say is true, and what your kitabs and the hadith predict and foretell, everything is true. There's no doubt about it. Whatever the hadith has said, must happen. Now, they got so much of yaqeen in the hadith. In their libraries, in their circles, they got so much of yaqeen. It says that, how do we gather that y'all are true? We gathered that y'all are true, that whenever there was an encounter, recently or in the past, then in most instances, the Muslims were least, they were very ill-equipped. They were ill-equipped, right? Numbers were small, and they were very weakly equipped. But yet, wherever we see, and they are walking over us, they are walking over us. Afghanistan, they are walking over us. In other places, they are walking over us. Right? In Afghanistan, up to now, one person had come in from that side. He was explaining. And I just asked him, how's it that side now? So everything is going very well. Came in from Pakistani. So he'd been to Afghanistan several times. He said, no, it's going on very well. And Mullah Umar said, no, I met him as well. He's also doing very well. So I asked him, what's the latest? He said, the latest is we are in control. In most of the day and night, we are in control. About 3-4 hours in the day, they are in control, but we are in control otherwise. Right? And our request to them is, they must hang on for some time. You know? Because they hang on, we get some business out of this, you know. We get them, kill them, get the weapons, get the arms, all that. And our business operates, carries on. Now they run away, then we've got no business to do. So we will obliterate them, but gradually, you know, gradually we'll finish them up. But in the meanwhile, our business carries on. They may be shooting one person, but in the process, hundreds of people are getting food, drink, everything is going on very, very well. It's going very well. Since we are enjoying life, we've got no problems. So, the spirits are very, very, very high. the spirits are not dampened. We shouldn't feel at any time that the spirits are dampened. Sometimes for a short interval there is a problem, right? But afterwards, eventually, they would rule the day. Then this rabbi is saying, you see, there's two things. One is that you're very ill-equipped, but you all rule, you all control. When you come to the battlefield, you all control. And we know it's you all that are controlling. Right? Then the second thing he explained, that whenever we tried to hurt you all, you know, and do carpet bombing, whatever, finish you all up, precisely around the same time, then in our countries there is a major crisis. Sometimes it's snowing, sometimes it's raining, sometimes there's storms, and thousands of homes are just wiped out. Wiped out. One student comes from that side, so he tells me that the whole of Detroit is like a ghost town, whereas there was like a buzzing industrial area. In the whole of America, it was the most buzzing and industrial area, but the whole thing is like a ghost town. It's reached to such a point that there's nowhere to go and record a criminal offense. The criminal offense, robbery, stealing, killing, murdering, but there's nowhere to go and record the thing. There's no light, no proper sanitary, nothing. So that's just one town. There's so many towns that are just going into the doldrums just in this way. So he says, we understand that the divine assistance is with you all, is with you people. From the way events are unfolding, we understand it's with you all. But what we are after, we know that the divine assistance is with you all, right? The people of the sky, the heavens are with you all. But what we want to do is just to delay the process. What? We want to delay the process. So then, how should we delay the process? So say, the way that we will delay the process is, we'll read all your kitabs from cover to cover, and we'll see now how to break you down, how to sever the divine help from reaching you. You know, like in Afghanistan, when the supplies are coming in, so the mujahids are looking for ways to sever the supplies reaching, right? Or bomb them, do something. But they won't allow the supplies to reach them, right? They will try and interrupt the whole flow. So like you people are interrupting the flow of supplies reaching us, we'll also try and interrupt the divine flow reaching you people. So in order for us to get this done, we'll do two things. Two things we will do. Now who is talking? It's a rabbi. Now they got a whole lobby. They got a whole lobby and a whole brain network working behind all this. So we will do two things. And there's two things also we have discussed from your own books. It's not that that we have invented this. We have got it from your own books, that this is the way you prevent divine help. This is the way that you will prevent divine help. Not two, but three ways. And the way that you will prevent the coming of divine help. The one way is that we will encourage lewdness, right? We will encourage it at any level until to such an extent, he's saying, that we'll bring your woman into the streets. Now this is the word of a rabbi. I'm not saying from myself, right? We'll bring all your women into the streets, into the malls, into the working places, into the hub of the activity, male activity, will bring them right there. So now this is one way to interrupt the divine assistance. And then he quotes the hadith. Now he's talking about this, and then he's supporting with hadith. Now imagine what a sharp person this person has been. What a cunning person, right? He says in the Bani Israel, there was an incident, right, between the Bani Israel and one powerful nation at that time, right? Allah Pak speaks about يَا قَوْمِ ادْخُلُوا الْأَرْضَ الْمُقَدَّسَةَ الَّتِي كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَكُمْ وَلَا تَرْتَدُّوا عَلَىٰ أَدْبَارِكُمْ فَتَنْقَلِبُوا خَاسِرِينَ. The Bani Israel were commanded to go into one town. Right? This is another incident, but the Bani Israel were commanded to fight, right? So they all got prepared. When they all got prepared, so the opposition, they had been watching and observing the Bani Israel, that they are small, weak equipped, but wherever they're going, they're just running over, they're just marching over, because they were the Jews were the Muslims of that time. So being the Muslims of the time, they were just scoring, and they were just winning, they were just marching over. So now, the opposition, they want to know, why these people are just marching over? So they wanted to stop the thing. Now how do we go and stop it? So we go and stop it in this way, that there is one prominent alim here, and he is mustajabu dawat. His du'as are all being answered. So we will ask him to make du'a in favor of us, not in favor of the Bani Israel and Musa alayhi salam. So they went up to this Bal'am Ba'ura, whose du'as are answered, and he knows the way to get his du'as answered. So we'll go to him and ask him to make du'a on our behalf and not on behalf of Bani Israel. So Bal'am Ba'ura, initially he resisted. He said, you see, I'm making du'a against Musa alayhi salam, I'm making du'a against myself. That's destruction. He's godly. He's from Allah Ta'ala. And I'm making du'a against him, he's going to fall directly against me. Sometimes, this is just a point for us to understand. Al-Mu'tazila says that in India there was this woman, a little bit of a lewd class, right? That used to be dancing, etc. That was the occupation. I don't know what's the name. There's a name for this type of woman. Starts with a meme. Anyway, Manginiya or something, I can't remember the word. So, now these were dancing women, right? And that was the occupation, that was the profession. So Maulana came to Thanabhavan. When he came to Thanabhavan, he see this thing is carrying on. So he spoke out against it. When he spoke out against it, then these women began to curse him. Allah Bak, break him, destroy him, close all his avenues of rosy and all that. So someone asked Maulana, but these women are cursing you, won't you get affected? So where they'll get affected? Are they doing any sawab work that they are cursing me and the curse will fall upon me? No, their curses won't reach me. Okay. So if you're on the right and someone is cursing you, working against you, then don't worry about it. Right. If you're on the right, there's going to be a class of people who are going to be against you. They'll curse you, they will make jadu, they'll do whatever else. So just disregard it. You do your masnoon du'as, recite more Quran Sharif and carry on. Those things will not affect you, inshallah. Right. So when they went up to this Bal'am, this was Bal'am's response. See, I'm making dua against Musa alayhi salam and the Bani Israel, then I'm making dua against myself. So I don't want this curse to come onto me. So they bribed him with a lot of wealth. See, this is the first bait that they will use is wealth. They say also in the history of jihad, Muslim couldn't be suppressed with fear. You couldn't suppress him, you couldn't push him down with fear. Yes, he got suppressed with wealth. You put a carrot before him, put some bait before him, and you turned him away, right? So there are a lot of incidents that you will find where something was presented to that person and you just switched him around. So a Muslim cannot be turned away with fear. With fear, he doesn't relent. But if there's something that will influence him and that will consume his wealth. Right? So the first bait that we will use is wealth. Right? Now, in the modern day, how we will use the wealth, he's explaining. See, how we will use the wealth? We will use the wealth in this way, that we will corrupt all your dealings. Right? How we will corrupt your dealings? is that we'll give Islamic names for everything, right? But really everything will be interest-based. It'll have an ethos of Islam, Islamic mudarabat and whatever. But really if you go and investigate and thoroughly go and examine all these things here, most of the operations are interest-based, though they've given it an Islamic ethos. So this is the Jewish talking, right? And this is a support of what he's saying. There was a consultant of this whole area, consultant. I think it was of West Bank, I can't remember exactly. West Bank or Aqsa. He was around here. Came and introduced himself, I'm a consultant for this whole area here. So I asked him, what's your portfolio, what's your position? He said, no, I'm the Islamic consultant for this whole area. MashaAllah. So you're the Islamic consultant. That means everything pertaining to Islam in the bank, then people refer to it. He said, yes. So I asked him, what is the definition of riba? Simple thing. I'm starting him off. In your opinion, what's the definition of riba interest? No answers. What is murabaha? What is mudaraba? No, I don't know. Now he doesn't know anything, right? So they may have enshrined that whole law in their constitution, but are they applying it? They must have enshrined the whole thing into their constitution. But I ask you, are they applying it? They can't apply it. That is now the consultant. Then I asked, when Mulana was here, he was on the advisory committee in the Baraka Bank. So he was here for some work. So I asked him, all right, but you are in advisory capacity there. So I want to know from you, what's your personal take? Not taking his name now, what's your take on this whole thing? So he tells me that in writing, they have got everything that above board, you know, in writing, that this is halal, this is haram, this is how it's supposed to be done. But the practice is not there. Look at the highest person, the person that is longest serving in the bank, and up till now, the bank is over 20 years now approximately. But the person that is longest serving up, you know, and the person that is new, he doesn't know how to apply it, or he doesn't apply it. One of the two. He doesn't know how to apply it, or he's not applying it. So just having that enshrined doesn't make it halal, doesn't make it kosher. Right. So that's the first thing that we'll do. We will corrupt all your dealings. Right. And he says, we'll corrupt your dealings. How we'll corrupt your dealings? In this way. Right. Because you have to relate to the money homes. You can't bypass them. In doing business, you have to go through them, right? We have to go through them and we'll corrupt them. So when you corrupt them, then your money will be tainted. When your money will be tainted, your wealth will be tainted, then that divine assistance will be stopped. So the Mawai asked him, just in passing, how do you come to that? How do you come to that if the wealth is all tainted and adulterated, then divine assistance will be stopped? He says, but you didn't read the kitabs. He's asking, didn't you read the kitabs? He says, see, in so-and-so kitab it's recorded that Hajjaj bin Yusuf, we know about his oppression, right? And there used to be a pious group of people. If any oppressive ruler came, they made dua against him and that person was wiped out. So Hajjaj bin Yusuf, he discovered that these people make baddua for any oppressive ruler. So what he did, at the moment he was thrown in as the governor, right? The first thing he did was he invited that class and he fed them 100% haram. From head to tail, he fed them haram, haram and haram and haram. After feeding them with haram, he said, now I'm not scared of you people. Because your duas will all be in suspense. None of your duas will be accepted. I can do all my groundwork, all my zulm and all my oppression, I can do it, I can move on. Your badduas and your curses, no one affect me. Now what he's saying is spot on. He's spot on. He fed them with haram. Now look at the duas. Duas have no meaning, finish. Well, it doesn't have the power. You cut off the whole line has been cut off. Interruption in the line. How do you expect the power to come through? So that was the first thing. The second thing I'm speaking about is this lewdness, right? This Balaam Bahura story. So they bribed the wife, so much of gold, whatever else they gave. Tell your husband to do this, you know, or make istikhara. He relented. Eventually he relented. He saw all that gold and all that treasures, so he had to relent. When he relented, he says, I'll make istikhara. Now you can't make istikhara for such a thing. Can you make istikhara? Istikhara for such a thing is not acceptable, not valid. Can you make istikhara whether I must perform my zuhr namaz or not? Can you make istikhara for that? Can't make istikhara for that. Istikhara is only for a permissible thing, not a thing that is mustahab, sunnat, wajib, farz. You can't make istikhara. Ramzan month came, making istikhara. Must I fast or not fast? Must I keep roza or not? Must I go for tarawih namaz or not? You can't make istikhara for that. So istikhara is only for a thing that is permissible, both sides. Doing it or not doing it is permissible. Like for example, you say marry this woman or that woman. There you can make istikhara because both sides are permissible. Permissible for you to marry this one, permissible for you to marry this one. It's not wajib or compulsory to marry one of them. Both is permissible. Or you want to open up a business, so you can make istikhara that, you know, must I open this business or must I open that business? Must I open up here or open up in Cape Town? Where must I open up? So that all sides are permissible and you're making istikhara for that. That's permissible. But this is not permissible. So like a wise thing, you want to make istikhara for that, making baddua against Musa alayhi salam. The first night he was struck, don't do it. Second again. Third, fourth night he carried on making and now he's not seeing any dreams. So he misconstrued it to his convenience. You know, see, nothing is coming to me now. That means I can make baddua for Musa alayhi salam. Because nothing is coming to me now. Right. So when he opened his tongue to make baddua against Musa alayhi salam, the kitab says that thereafter those words of curse began to go against him and against those people that bribed him. Okay. Against him, says they began to tell him, "Bhai, what are you doing? We are paying you to make dua for us. You make dua against us now. What's wrong?" So he says, "I'm not in control of myself now. My tongue is not in control of myself. Things are just flowing out of my tongue." So then he told his people here, the people that he was making dua against was the Amalaka, right? He told the Amalaka, "But I can think of one idea to smash the Bani Israel. Because now God's assistance is with the Bani Israel, but there is an idea, there is a way how I can smash them down." So they asked, "What's the idea? How to do it?" He said, "The age-old trick is use women. You know, when you want divine assistance to be stopped, one is wealth, corrupt the dealings, right? Second is woman. Get some woman involved, and you get the woman involved, and then you're going to win." So the Bani Israel away from home, already a year or something passed, and now they are starving already. Eh? They're already starving. Eh? By the 8th, 9th day of Etikaf, you are already talking about home. Eh? Here they have over 1 year, 2 years away. You can imagine what was the height of starvation. So anyway, they got some loose women. They gave them instructions that if these people make any advances, you mustn't resist. Now Musa alayhi salam, he warned these people, "Hey, you don't ever start this thing." One person went and did whatever he was not supposed to do. He committed the crime. When he committed the crime, as a result of that crime, a plague broke out in the Bani Israel, wherein 70,000 people were killed. One shot. See? So he says, now the second line in this whole strategy is how to break and how to stop the divine assistance reaching them, lewdness. One is wealth, corrupt the wealth, all the transactions, everything, get it corrupt. The second is lewdness, promote lewdness in them. And get the woman right, get their woman to come right into the bazaar, right into the malls, right into the working place, get them to be right, working shoulder to shoulder with men. So now they'll be tempted women, obviously. If you do not, the other type of zina, then there will be the zina of the eyes, the zina of the hands, zina of the mouth, it must be some zina. So in the process, Allah's help is not coming in. Because Allah's help will come in with some procedures, right? But now they are doing all these things. How do they expect Allah Ta'ala's help to come in? Allah Ta'ala is not going to come in. Now tell me what that person is saying. Does it make sense or not? Said, we'll get your woman to come right into the center of the workplace. We'll get your woman to do it. Now you're getting a woman that is driving. Right? She's jogging. She's gymming. She's schooling. She's teaching. She's going to university. She's lecturing. Right? Right? She's a professional woman. Right? There isn't a work that a man does that a woman is not doing. Show me any work that a man does that a woman is not doing. Is there anything that you can think of? You can't think of one work that a man is doing and a woman is not doing. So they became equal. So that was the conspiracy. In the whole conspiracy, just remember when these Jews, when they conspire, right? In the whole conspiracy, they don't mind if their own people get used. Like, they got the casinos, you know, and all this whatever lewd thing that is carrying on. If their own women get used there, they don't worry. They're not worried. So long as at the end, they are the winners. In the operation, even if their own women are used to be lewd, to be whatever, but they will do it. You know, when they wanted to finish Iraq, and that Saddam had put up that nuclear reactor that was about $9 billion. $9 billion. So they had thought of a conspiracy how to get it done, how to break it. But everything was done very, very discreet, very, very subtle. But they had an idea how to break this thing. So what they had to do is to discover the scientist who did all this, who was the main operator in the whole thing. Because they couldn't detect where it is located. They couldn't find the location. So they had to find now who was the person behind the whole operation. They found that this is a so-and-so person. And he's scheduled to come to London at such and such a date. Right? The game is up now, we'll get the thing done. So that person that had to come to London, right, he had to take a certain bus to come to go to a certain place in that duration, 2 or 3 weeks that he was in London, he had to. So they got a woman driving on the same road, as beautiful as ever, and she comes right to the bus stop, and as though she's waiting for a passenger, and she parks right next to him, you know, as though she's waiting for a passenger, and then she offers him a lift. Don't you want a lift? I'm going in that end. And now he takes it. Now she made it a routine to give him a lift. In that, then she booked him out in the hotel. And whatever happened, happened. But in the whole process, in that 1 week, she found the entire location, what is he doing, where is he, where is the nuclear reactor. And the next week that he was bombed, finished. So 8-9 billion is gone through a love triangle. See this love, how powerful it is. So you can use it in your favor and you can use it against you. $9 billion just went away. Just calculate $9 billion, how much? With the rand and dollar, let's see how much. In 1 week it's gone. So we think to ourselves that we are smart and we are sharp and all that. And we think sometimes, many a times we feel that why Allah's assistance is not coming to us. But then, do we see our crimes as well? Do you see our crimes as well? This haram we're talking of, right? I was sitting in Dawat. So one friend of mine is telling me, but you know, the Dubai port is very advanced, you know. One of its kind. The whole world, they don't have something like this. So I told him, but at what price? He asked me, but what do you mean what price? I explained to him that last year, the highest liquor sales was in Dubai. For a single night, the highest liquor sales, one group had bought approximately 3 million rand worth of wine in a single night. So that was the price they had to pay. Because they tendered for this, right? When they tendered, they had to conform to some of their Western standards, right? And in conforming to that, they had to get all lewd women, they had to have wine, they had to have everything. Now you're conforming, now you won the tender, right? But that was the price that you had to pay. You pay this price and you got it. Is it worth the price? Ask yourself, is it worth the price? Month of Ramadan, and you've got all those things going on. In all your prominent places, you've got all these things going on. So I ask you, is it worth the price? Not worth the price. But then how do you want Allah's assistance to come? It's like, you know, you come to a businessman and you say, you know, I want to be the manager in your shop, right? So the business will ask you for the CVs, right? What you do, what's your practices. In your practices, there's a lot of wrong corruption. Is he going to give you that position? So you asking, we Muslims, we are asking for a position by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we should be ruling. Antumul alun, right? But we don't want to be mu'minin. We are asking Allah ta'ala that antumul alun, you know, we want to be in supremacy, right? We want to be ruling. But we don't want to be true in our faith. So how will Allah give us that position? He won't give us that position. So Allah is giving you the position, but you on your side of the deal, you go and play your side of the deal, then Allah will give it to you. But you're not playing your side of the deal and you want this, how can that happen? So that was the second thing that he explained. Right? The first was wealth, how to corrupt that wealth. That in the name of Islam, we'll make you do all riba and insurance, everything will make you do. Everything will make you do. That's why people come and ask me about insurance, right? When they ask me, then I tell them. I won't tell them of my own. But when they ask, then they ask for it, so I tell them. So I tell them, by is no different to a casino. Show me the difference between an insurance institute and a casino or a conventional bank. Show me the difference. It's no different. Right? Casino also, you're putting 5 rand against 500 rands, right? Isn't it? And insurance is the same, putting 5 rand, you're getting 500 rands. Right? Subject to whatever. If this happens, then you will get this, 500 rands. If there's an accident, it will cover you up. So much, 10,000, 100,000 will cover you up. So it's subject to some event. So the casino is also the same, exactly the same. And if you get the right number, we'll give you so much. It's subject to some event. Right? So what's the difference? Show me the difference, then I can tell you it's legal or permissible. But if there's no difference, then why are we selective that the casino is haram and this is halal? Why are we selective? Is there any reason for that? Any grounds for that? Okay. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is women. And get them into the workplace. If they're going to be in the workplace, then you ask yourself, how difficult will it be then to look after your chastity and your purity? Whereas a Muslim woman, her purity and chastity was something that, you know, something that everybody recognized, everybody understood. In the old days, one Muslim woman was taken away. She happened to be a princess, right? Or she happened to be the queen's wife, one of the queen's wives. And she had, it was some war, and she had to be taken as a captive. And she's the queen's wife. Right, there's a war, and she's taken as a captive. So when she's taken as a captive, now she's the king's wife, so it to come to this king, the kafir king. But now she's so careful about her chastity, she's trying to work out a plan, how can I preserve my chastity? Come what may after that, but my purity must be preserved. So she says to the kafir king now, you know what, I had a lot of blessings, a lot of wealth, from the king, from the past king. I was the wife and I had a lot of blessings, a lot of favors I had. And one of the favors that I had was I had an amulet, I had a taweez, you know. So if I keep the taweez, I won't be killed. And he used to keep the taweez, therefore, see now, he wasn't killed. So you shoot, whatever you do, but that gun won't work. That won't work. You shoot him, you try to behead him with the sword, but it won't work. So that taweez is so powerful. And if you want, you can try it out. So I'll keep the taweez by me, and now you try and shoot me, see. Even in shorter, he shot her dead, finish, kalas. But whatever she did, but she preserved, the whole exercise, she preserved her purity. And death is easier than me ruining my chastity. So that Muslim woman, she was, you know, her chastity was second to none. Nobody would come near to her. You know, she was so clean. I often say this, you know, if you have a group of 100 men, there may be just one person or two people whose minds never float around haram, right? Maybe they didn't do haram, But at some point, some haram thing is playing in your mind. This is that, whatever, girl, whatever, whatever. But some haram thing is floating in your mind. But you, by the same token, if you have 100 Muslim women, at least average or above average, right? Average converted Muslims. Their minds doesn't even work in haram. They are so clean. Mentally also they are so clean. At heart and the mind they are so clean, that the mind doesn't go into haram. I'm talking of the average, not the below average now. The average or above average, you won't have them, their minds even going towards haram. And now show me, in a group of men, honestly in the house of Allah Ta'ala, can they tell us, you know, our minds, we didn't do haram, but our minds do, they not flow around haram. So they're so clean in their minds. So that was the second thing that he brought up. And the third thing he brought up is, you know, how to impede and how to interrupt the assistance of Allah Ta'ala. The way to break the assistance of Allah Ta'ala is to divide them, to break them up, to divide them, right? And how do we divide them? You'll find a religious class concerned about deen, giving deeni leadership or deeni guidance, right? The class that is giving deeni leadership or deeni guidance, to break them up from the public, right? So when you've broken them up, we detach them, right? When we detach them, so will they have any type of leadership? Will they have any type of person instructing them? No, they got no leadership now. Everybody's for his own. So you'll find now the modernist Muslim, modernist educated Muslim, you know, this kitab says this and this kitab says this. What's your take? So does he have any leadership? Has he committed himself to following anybody? He hasn't. He hasn't committed himself to following anybody. So then, if he hasn't committed himself to following anybody, then who will he follow? He'll follow his own understanding and his own reasoning. And you have 10 people, right? 10 people's reasoning will go in 10 different directions. It doesn't mean you've got 10 people, so all of them will think alike and they'll think correct. They're all intelligent people, but all 10 people's reasoning will go in 10 different directions. So the leadership is broken. When it's been broken, now we can manipulate them. We can maneuver them however we want to maneuver them. Because they got no leadership. If they got leadership now, they committed to one person. They got no leadership then. They got no alim that they feel committed towards, that they feel that they should be following. So now it's easy to manipulate them. And as I say, so they going to access the kitabs themselves. When they access the kitabs themselves, then they haven't been trained in that. They are looking at translated versions. So, how sure can you be that they are going right? How sure can you be? They say, one person came from Afghanistan to India, you see. So, in India, if you're boarding the trains in India, it's like an international law that you can only carry about 20 kilos, not more than 20 kilos. Each passenger is allowed 20 kilos. Like in our internal flights also, you only allow 20 kilos. So they, as well, in the trains as well, you only allow 20 kilos. So one Afghani came into the train, and he had about 60 kilos. So the conductor came around to check the tickets and whatever else luggage he's got. So he sees he's got 60 kilos, but you know, you have to pay an extra fee for that luggage of yours. So now this Afghani, he says to this Indian conductor, okay, bhai, no, you misunderstood the whole thing. See, the law is that how much a passenger can carry. Now, 20 kilos is for your weak Indians. You're small, little built, so you can only carry 20 kilos. Therefore, the law says that there must be 20 kilos. It's not for us. For us, you know, we see, just one hand, I pick this whole thing up here. So this is for you people, not for me. It doesn't apply to me, it applies to you only. Now, he's also educated, and this fellow also educated. But his brain is taking him in one direction, and the law is saying something else. Now, if the law was so easy, that everybody can construe it, everybody can explain it, then I think there wouldn't have been any need to have an advocate, to have an attorney. Because you can't you can't explain the law as it is enshrined in the constitution. Can you explain it? You can't. In the court, can you give an explanation? Interpretation must be by someone that is professional. Right? A professional person, there must be a precedence, or the explanation must be given by someone that is professional. But you go and give the explanation that this is the law, South African law, and this is the explanation to it, will the court accept that? It won't accept it. So he also tried to give an explanation. It's not that he broke away, but I ask you that if the Quran and the Hadith were free for everybody to explain and interpret, what would the Quran Sharif become? What would happen to the Quran Sharif? Right. One simple example that I will use. See, the Quran Sharif says that فَلَمْ تَجِدُوا مَانْ, you're traveling and you don't find water. You're traveling and you don't find water. فَلَمْ تَجِدُوا مَانْ فَتَيَمَّمُوا سَعِيدًا طَيِّبًا. So then make tayammum. You're traveling, you don't find water, right? So what you must do? You make tayammum. Or you are traveling and you are in the month of Ramadan, فَعِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ, that you can fast on other days. You are traveling now, so you don't have to fast whilst you are traveling. You can postpone the fast for some other days after Ramadan. Right? Now, I am staying in Spingo Beach. I got my business in Spingo Rail. I'm traveling every day. To work, I'm traveling every day. So I'll make tayammum and I won't fast every day. And I'll travel every day, right till I die. So do I need to cover the fast? Do I need to make qaza? I ask you, do I need to make qaza? According to that reasoning now, I got it from the Quran Sharif. It's not from anywhere else. Do I need to fast? Because every day of my life I'm traveling. And do I need to make wuzu? Because I'm traveling, I don't find water. I'm going from Spingo Beach to Spingo Rail on the route. I'm not finding any water. Or sometimes you have a situation in Spingo Beach that this is the water interruption. Right? Now, I didn't find any water. Can I make tayammum now? According to what you are saying, I can make tayammum. And I don't have to fast throughout that period. Now, if the Quran and the Hadith had to be free for everybody's interpretation, what would happen? It would have been worse than kachumar. You know? Kachumar, it would have been worse than kachumar. There would have been no guidelines, no direction, nothing. So, this is the third point that this person brought up. We will cut the leaders, the dini leaders and the ulama, we'll cut them away from the public, we'll separate them. When we separate them, then each man is his own boss. Whatever comes to your mind, you're doing. Whatever comes to his mind, he's doing. So is there any leadership? When there's going to be no leadership, is there going to be any direction? Then to manipulate you is easy. Then we'll manipulate you through the media, through the television, to magazines, to everything. We got the whole control. The whole networking is ours. I mean, media networking, who controls it? All of us, we know, the Jews are controlled, right? So then we'll manipulate you because you got no leadership. Then we'll manipulate you. We got the media in our hands. We got magazines in our hands. We got the newspapers in our hands. We got the television in our hands. We got the radio in our hands. So we'll manipulate you. So you see what this person is being saying. Now this is not many years ago, over 20 years ago, this is what they were planning. And now you can see with your own eyes that what he's saying is all making sense. The last word is making sense. So this ilm that Nabi Sam is speaking about, Allah Pak will take away ilm, that ilm is that ilm that is got from person to person. Right? And it was so easy, you know, it was so easy, just go to the media, take one slot in a prime time and go and spread Islam. Then I would have said, you know, the Tabligh Jamaat is wasting time. And so much of mehnat they're making, going to Pehzal Jamaat, going here, there, whatever else, to make one istima, they're making 6 months figure before the istima to come up, right? Why go and make all this magajmari and all this brain wrecking? Just take one slot in the television, spread Islam. I ask you, will Islam spread in that way? It won't spread. You know it, I know, you know it. Right? It won't spread in that way. It is just a fantasy. It is just that we become overawed. We become overawed with Western standards. Nothing more than that. The whole West is doing, the whole world is doing it. Why aren't you all doing it? So we become overwhelmed with Western standards, not what's within our own yard. So you see what he's been saying, that what plans we are going to use. One is corrupt the wealth, so that divine assistance will be taken away from them. Then bring about lewdness in them. Right? Just as a matter of interest, right? Can you show me one home who doesn't have a magazine or newspaper and something lewd in it? Show me one home. There'll be, alright, you got a good magazine, but one page or something, there'll be something wrong there. Right? There may be some picture of some woman. Right? And even these books that are supposed to be for education, right, education purposes, the pictures, you look at the pictures there, what are they promoting? Right? If there is any act or any play or any story, then if you find a boy, then with that boy you'll find a girl also. They're two playing, you know, Jack and Jill and up the hill, right? So you must have, if there's a boy, there must be a girl. It won't be just boy, it won't be just girls. So what you're promoting, the whole thing, what's the mindset that you're promoting? Can you understand these books here and the very subtle message that they are passing through? Can you understand it? Now, will that growing learner, will he have the cleanliness of the mind? He won't have the cleanliness of the mind. He said, no, it's just, we are just playing, we're just talking. So as a result now, when the learners are coming up in that way, you get so many emails. Nearly every week we get an email. I got a problem with my fiancé, can you make some dua for me? So you have to buy this fiancé story, is haram story. And you're asking me to make dua for haram. What she's asking is that fiancé, you know, we got some problems, so make dua. Because everything was going on very well, speaking to each other very well, and suddenly now it become rocky. Right? So I ask you, that fiancé story, is it right in the first place? Now this, you know, I explained in the beginning, there'll be a lot of knowledge, right? Explosion knowledge. But the hadith say that there won't be any knowledge. Knowledge will be taken away. So they have misconstrued the knowledge. They haven't understood the knowledge. The application is not there. They've got the information, but they don't know how to apply it. They don't know how to digest it. You go and find out in your own families. I throw a challenge. Go and find out in your own families. You'll find at least 70-80%. If there is any person that is proposed or engaged, there is some premarital relationship carrying on. Whether it's over the phone, whether it's over the internet, whichever way. But at least about an 80%, and there is some type of a relationship carrying on. And the worst thing is that they don't even consider that to be haram. That's even worse. Now, why won't the help of Allah Ta'ala be moved away? The help of Allah Ta'ala is not with your name, Yusuf, Ismail, or the help of Allah Ta'ala is subject to your amal. Straight. In kuntum mu'mini. If you are true in your iman, then my assistance is with you. But you don't want to be true. You want to carry on the ways of the kuffar, you want to carry on. And then you want to enjoy this. You want to enjoy my assistance, but you want to carry on your own way. Then you're not going to get that. You want that promotion in my business, then you have to conform. But you're not conforming. You're going your own way, and then you want me to give you a promotion. What, on what grounds? What's the merit? There must be some merit for me to give you that. If you got that merit, then I will give you that assistance. But you haven't got that, then how do you want me to give you any support? So it's so easy, it's so simple for us to think, but no, this won't come to our mind. So that is why they say, go in the Jamaat and get your minds right. At least get your understanding right. At a second level, if you can't do that, then come in a Khanqah or something, but get your understanding right, get your thinking right. The thinking is where everything starts off. If your thinking is right, then the whole operation goes right. Otherwise, your thinking is corrupt, then you're doing a lot of action, a lot of work, but work without any direction. You're doing a lot of work, but no direction. So the thinking has to come first, right? Allah Pak Tawfiq Naseeb.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So now today we'll discuss some of the adab of the home. And when a person is coming to his home and about to enter, then one should make his presence known that he is coming. That the person shouldn't, if he's knocking at the door, then he shouldn't say it is I or it's me, but rather he should inform them who he is. And there can be several situations where a person needs to make his presence known. One is if, for example, he is entering a place that is a common place where everyone sits, for example, it is the lounge. So then there, if there is a chance of the opposite gender sitting, for example, a person's mother and her friends are sitting there, then one, it is necessary for a person to make his presence known, that perchance if they are not observing parda, or if they have their scarves off their head, etc., then they would be able to make proper parda. Or for example, a person wants to enter the private room of somebody else, so then there it is compulsory that he first makes his presence known, he seeks their permission before entering. But if it is his own personal room, then there is, and he doesn't fear any other person being in that room, then a person can enter without even making his presence known. Then when entering the home, enter with salam and reciting the masnoon dua. Allahumma inni as'aluka khayra al-mawliji wa khayra al-makhraji. Bismillahi walajna wa bismillahi kharajna wa ala Allahi rabbina tawakkalna. Then whilst at home, a person should ensure that everything is neat and tidy, things are not scattered about and left untidy. A person should also keep the aspect of cleanliness, that this is also part of Iman and also part of Islam. Then if there is anything that is un-Islamic, whether in the form of pictures or whether in form of articles or magazines, then one should make an effort to remove it and take it out of the home. Then when leaving the home, then one should leave the home reciting the masnoon dua also, Bismillahi tawakkaltu ala Allah, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Then one should also make it a habit that he does everything for himself, by himself, that he shouldn't place the burden on others. For example, if there are some chores to be done at home and a person can do it by himself, then one shouldn't place the burden on his wife or on his children, but rather one should personally do it, as this was also the habit of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that he would also see to certain of the chores at home, that Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam wouldn't feel it below his dignity to carry it out. And one should also see to the comfort of others, that if others require anything at home, then a person shouldn't feel, for example, that I am the husband of the home or I am the father of the home, so everybody else needs to do their own thing. But one should see as far as possible how he can make others comfortable without causing any type of takleef to them. Then if you enter the home at a time when others are asleep, then do not disturb their sleep. For example, if you want to make salam, then make salam in such a tone or in such a voice that if a person is awake, then he will be able to hear the salam. And even if that person is asleep, then the voice or the sound will not disturb that person. Then daily, as a routine, time should be set out that where the entire family gets down to sit down and make some ta'aleem of the Fazail Kitab, some Basi Ziyawat. And also, time should be taken out to make tilawat of the Qur'an Majid and also dhikr. And also, it is preferable that where the entire family gets together and a collective dua is made for the hidayat and guidance of the family, and also for the betterment of the entire ummah.